We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
On today's episode, it is part two of the coach bracket. We have Kirby Smart, we have Dabo, we have Lincoln Riley. Where do they all fall?
I'm going Jonathan Smith over everybody. Over everybody!
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand, that fine gentleman over there, as always, in the heart of the Midwest, the Windy City, Chicago, Illinois. It's Dan Rubenstein, sir!
Yeah.
How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I suddenly feel a sneeze coming, so I don't know if you want to leave something like that in the episode, because that's a foreshadowing element. That's a tease, is what we call it in the biz.
Yeah.
But Ty, I'm wonderful. I'm excited to get into some coach talk.
Coach talk, indeed. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Don't forget to follow wherever it is you listen to podcasts. We would love to have you aboard this off-season train as it keeps on chugging along. Two episodes, public episodes every week on the public feed. You can also get access to bonus content. We're going to start ramping that up over at verballers.com. That is our Patreon. We would encourage you to go on out and check that out. Also, we've got a YouTube channel. We're doing a lot more on YouTube, youtube.com/@solidverbal or /thesolidverbal. Both will work. Today's episode, Dan, today's episode is a continuation of what we did on Tuesday. Obviously, there is something going on in the sports world this week. You may have heard of it. It's called the NCAA tournament, i.e. March Madness.
Were there playing games last night? Did that already happen?
There were two playing games last night.
Oh my God.
Tuesday.
How'd they
evening.
Do? How'd the teams do?
I saw that Mississippi State lost by one to Pitt, 60-59. I did not see who won the second game. There is another batch of games this evening, one of which is Arizona State playing for it. It's the battle of the 11 seeds playing for
forks
right
up
to get into play a number six seed. I'm not sure who they play. This is a college football show, Dan. We're not going to go through that bracket, but we are very bracket focused this week, which is why we started thinking about coaches, right? It all comes back to coaches here in the world of college football. On the first episode this week, we went through the top half of the bracket, the so-called South and Midwest sides of the bracket. It all boiled down to a big matchup between Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh. Nick Saban obviously coming out on top. On today's episode, we are going to go through the second half of said bracket, a 32-coach bracket. We're going through the East and the Southeast side of things to see who gets to square off against Lord Saban. That's where we're at right now.
Yeah, and I'd like to issue a retraction because somebody tweeted us. They said, you indicated that only one ACC team, Clemson, had made the college football playoff. Mm. And not only is that incorrect because Florida State made it in the very first playoff, I was at the game in which Florida State played in the playoff when Oregon quite literally ran away with that game against Florida State. So, you know, the dad brain comes for us all that become parents. You can be a mom with dad brain. I don't even know how that works, but that's my official retraction. I apologize for the seminal erasure from the college football playoff.
The seminal erasure. Shall we just dive right back in?
Let's do it.
Let's go to the East bracket, Dan. The number one seed on that side of things, Dabo Swinney, coach at Clemson, squaring off against the number eight seed on the eastern side of the bracket, Mike Gundy, coach of Oklahoma State.
Okay. What are your initial thoughts? And by the way, as a refresher, my rubric means essentially it comes down to it's not just what they've done at their school necessarily. It's some kind of body of work. And it's also if we were to use a hypothetical of let's find not the best team. How would they do at the best place, but not the worst place? Let's see what they could do at a place without huge advantages or huge disadvantages. And so I termed it the goodest school. So a top 20-ish school recruiting and results wise. How would they do in Chapel Hill at North Carolina? In the ACC, which Dabo we can already speak to, how would they do at North Carolina in terms of outperforming the average performance at North Carolina, the wins above replacement?
Yeah. You know, there was a moment in time where Mike Gundy was a trendy name for some big openings around college football. I seem to recall during one of the moments when LSU was open, Mike Gundy was a name that came up for LSU. He's been thrown about throughout college football as somebody who could come in. You haven't heard much about that lately. I'm fully out of Mike Gundy. I'm fully out of Mike Gundy. I've sold all my stock as of about 2 years ago. And here's the thing with Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy, I think, is fourth right now among active coaches in terms of wins at the FBS level. So he's been there a good long time. He's had a lot of success at Oklahoma State. You know how many times he's won the conference in his 18 years at Oklahoma State?
How many times, Tyler?
Once.
One time.
Now, to get Oklahoma State to a level of relative stability and to be, I think, a contender more often than not, that is not without a claim. Mike Gundy has done a good job as coach. But one does want to ask the question, why hasn't he won the big thing more? And secondly, what is the state of the program now? You know, if we talked on our last episode about Jimbo Fisher, and I made the pitching and the fastball analogy, or I guess the NFL quarterback and fastball analogy, right? When it goes, it goes.
Right.
I wonder if some of the steam is out of the Mike Gundy balloon, to continue my awkward analogy. I wonder if we're at that point with things, because as we speak to you now, as we record this on the Ides of March 2023, it feels like that Oklahoma State program has lost a lot in the offseason and may be in a bit of disarray.
Well, he also, you know, you file Mike Gundy under the, you know, after a decade, it's time for everybody to move on type theory that Steve Spurrier famously had a while back. And he's been there much longer than a decade at this point. He's been there since 2005 is what I'm seeing right here. Yep. That was a different era, Ty. So he had a string of 4 out of 5 seasons winning 10 games between 2013 and 2017. And then it seemed like, by and large, you know, there were exceptions for swaths of time. Offense has fallen off a cliff for Oklahoma State. In terms of finding consistently clean quarterback play, offensive coordinator hires working out, you know, obviously now they've promoted from within these past couple seasons. But it seems like when there's no offense in Mudville in Oklahoma State, there is just not much above 500 football to be played. And the defense has been the star these past, well, before this past season. But, you know, the Jim Knowles era was quite friendly to the Oklahoma State program. He seemed to be a pretty good recruiter. Like, I would file Mike Gundy. I'm using the goodest term for North Carolina. Mike Gundy might be the goodest coach in America overall, right? That he's consistently been good, but not great, right? He has flirted with double-digit win seasons a lot. He's had double-digit win seasons, but he's not a hump-type coach, right? It's one, you said one Big 12 title, and there have been some weird Oklahoma seasons, and that's by and large the reason why they haven't won the Big 12 title there. But yeah, I was in the Gundy camp like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, saying we're just not respecting the job this guy has done enough. They're so dependably good in a sport where it's so hard to do so. But these past few years, it almost seems like it's going to be too difficult to get it back. And we are going down a very awkward road, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, all those years with Spencer Sanders, and look, you can love him or hate him, but Spencer Sanders was good enough to, I think, have better results. Now, 2 seasons ago, 12-2, that was a very good Oklahoma State team.
Yeah.
Very good defensive Oklahoma State team, and won the Fiesta Bowl, obviously, against my Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That was a good team. But if we're talking about being at a place for a good long time and not having a whole lot to show for it outside of record and outside of some big bowl wins, I'm out on Gundy. So this one for me is Dabo. I didn't want to talk too much about Dabo because I've got him going through with flying colors here in this first round matchup, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about the merits of what he's accomplished at Clemson. So are we in agreement that it's Dabo?
We're in agreement that it's Dabo. And to punctuate my claim, since 2017, 2018, when they finished second in the country in points per drive on offense in 2018, I think 18th, they have not finished in the top 40. And it is just, I mean, they dealt with injury at quarterback, of course, but it has been really ugly there. And so there's just very little confidence that Mike Gundy, if we were in 2016, 2017, I could make the case because it's so much more difficult right now at Oklahoma State, it seems, than Clemson with what Dabo's built up, that you could say, look, degree of difficulty, like we should actually have this conversation. Can't have it today.
Yeah. By the way, if I reference the fine chart that our good friends over at College Football Reddit put together, same chart I referenced on the last episode, 5-year recruiting average, Oklahoma State 34th, which doesn't come as a surprise, but that puts them right next to like Utah and Iowa. And you could argue that both Utah and Iowa have a lot more to show for the talent that they've gotten over the last
years. And Oklahoma State has put a lot more money into that program to upgrade facilities and make Stillwater and that stadium, those facilities, that the bright shining star, and hasn't translated to recruiting results.
Number 4, Chip Kelly. Number 5, Hugh Freeze. This is a fascinating, fascinating matchup. We're going to have a lot of those. I think so.
Okay.
You don't think so? You disagree?
So this is the body of work question then. This is, we don't have much lately with Hugh Freeze at a big place. We had essentially a 2-year stretch, 3-year stretch of Hugh Freeze doing impressive things in the SEC West. We had 4 nearly impeccable years for Chip Kelly at Oregon, that they win the conference, go to nothing but BCS bowls, leaves the place in incredible shape. They go to a national championship 2 years after and produce a Heisman winner with somebody Chip recruited. UCLA has been good, but not great. Disappointing starts, but they've improved, at least on one side of the ball. I would rather have a career like Chip Kelly's right now. Failed NFL coach. Hugh Freeze let go because of off the field issues and some within program issues. I don't think there's a universe in which Chip Kelly wins less at North Carolina than Hugh Freeze.
Right. So again, just to rehash, we keep bringing up North Carolina. The reason we're bringing up North Carolina is you threw them out, as you said, kind of at the top as the goodest program, right? If we just take a program that is sort of on the fringe of being in that top tier or second tier, right? A decent team. And you put any of these coaches in that position, which would do better? I think Chip would do better. I think Chip would do better. And I think he's proven now over the course of his career that even though it took a little bit of time to get things going at UCLA, he is getting things going at UCLA, right? Got a big time quarterback recruit in Dante Moore's, I would assume, going to start day one. I think he should start.
I don't know about that, but yeah.
It might be a stretch, but I think we'll see Dante Moore this year. And the work that he did over the last couple of years, getting Dorian Thompson Robinson and the ground game in particular at UCLA up to a really good spot, that is admirable. Hugh Freeze, I can't get the image of Hugh Freeze out of my head of him in the hospital bed. I will never get that image out of my head. And I know that was, of course, steadfast commitment to his craft as a college football coach that led to that ridiculous scene of him in a hospital bed giving the thumbs up. ever since that point, I can't take him seriously. Never mind the off-field stuff that got him banished from Ole Miss.
Right.
From that point forward, I have a hard time taking him seriously.
Yeah. And the recruiting issues. Sure.
Recruiting
certainly.
Issues. Yeah. Right. So I'm big time out on Hugh Freeze. And for me, honestly, this would be one of those Ty Hildenbrand emotional scale items where sure. I kind of just don't like the guy.
So
if I'm being honest, I kind of don't like the guy.
So then you're going to be the person. You're going to have to stretch your brain right now.
Yeah.
Make the case for Hugh Freeze, right? Construct the intellectual scaffolding
sure.
for Hugh Freeze succeeding more. Again, this is the most random good school we could come up with that would threaten for a New Year's Six game at its best, right? I think that's fair to say for North Carolina. They
sure.
have that type of ceiling. What is the case for Hugh Freeze succeeding more consistently and being the better coach, being somebody that you could depend on to win more, hire better, recruit better, whatever, at North Carolina?
Hugh Freeze has won quicker.
Sure.
I think Hugh Freeze has built himself a reputation as a football coach, as somebody who can come in and turn things around very quickly. He is obviously willing to go to extremes to recruit and do whatever it takes to win. That's part of why Auburn hired him after doing their quote unquote due diligence.
Yeah. Hit the portal super hard, you know, hit the ground running, building that roster back up. Yep.
He's aggressive. I think again, as a football coach, he's proven he can come in and win very quickly and turn things around. Chip Kelly was handed the baton at Oregon, obviously took that program to greater heights than it had ever been before.
Yep.
But still was handed a program that was already in pretty good shape. Upon getting to UCLA, it took a while, man. Right? It wasn't all that long ago you and I were talking about our Chip's days numbered.
Totally.
Westwood. So a great season this past year. I think a lot to build on moving forward. But the case for Hugh Freeze is probably he's at like a bar rescue situation in a sense. As you've alluded to on this program a couple times now,
sure.
he can come in and very quickly turn around the fortunes of a program.
Hugh Freeze won on a bigger stage against better teams. He was able to construct more consistently dangerous defenses, the side of the ball that his background is not within. Chip Kelly dominated a Pac-12 with a post-USC, a post-Pete Carroll USC mid-sanctions.
That's right.
A down Washington program that was pre-Chris Peterson. UCLA was down and out. They were fine. I think it was a Rick Neuheisel UCLA era. The Arizona schools were all over the place. Utah hadn't fully weaponized, and I think he only had one season overlapping with Utah, if memory serves, as a Pac-12 team. So perhaps we could say, look, Chip did great things at Oregon, but you know he loses the national championship to Auburn, just decides not to block Nick Fairley.
Right.
That... found one great quarterback. Darren Thomas was very good too. And Masoli was fine, but you know, didn't necessarily have the track record of doing much beyond the Pac-10/12. So Hugh Freeze, on the other hand, he beats Bama twice. He finds quarterbacks, he finds defensive superstars. You know, he's playing in what at least was and probably still is on a certain level, the toughest division in the sport, and finds a way to build a roster to win huge games. So the highs of Hugh Freeze are arguably maybe a little bit higher than the highs of Chip Kelly, but at North Carolina, I want to be able to depend on my head coach.
Chip Kelly goes through.
It's Chip.
Chip goes through. Now we get to the interesting part of this bracket, Dan.
Yeah.
As I was looking this over, I can envision some very strange scenarios taking place out of this final four in the East bracket.
Okay.
Number 3, Luke Fickell. Number 6, Josh Heupel.
Fickell against Heupel. Okay, so would you say 3 and 6?
Fickell's a 3. Josh Heupel's a 6. Again, for those who didn't tune in or have to go back and tune in to the Tuesday episode, the seeding for this bracket was determined from an article that our friend Bruce Feldman wrote for The Athletic where he ranked his top 25 coaches in college football. There was also a paragraph where he listed some names that weren't in his top 25. I added those in as well as Mario Cristobal, just to make sure we got to an even 32. As I said on the last show, we didn't have the bandwidth to go full 64. That would have been more content than I think everybody bargained for
sure.
this week. So we kept it to 32, and just using Bruce's seating and kind of drawing a bracket based on it, that's how we get Luke Fickell at 3 in the East bracket, Josh Heupel at 6. What do you think?
Well, on slightly different levels, they played Alabama within, they each played Alabama within a calendar year. Josh Heupel very quickly built a team that was capable of beating Alabama, and Luke Fickle did not. Now, it's easier to build that team in Tennessee than it is at Cincinnati, but that is a common data point that we have. Luke Fickle's been the head coach at one place, Josh Heupel two. Josh Heupel has had a couple of failed situations, a failed situation at Oklahoma notably, but did a good job at Mizzou as a coordinator and did a very nice job at UCF by and large. Got him hired at Tennessee. Whose star is brighter right now? That's an interesting question. Now that Fickle's at a new place, I think I would consider Fickle to be the better coach. Now at North Carolina, man, this is a really tough one.
I went back and forth, right?
Okay, so
yeah,
the case for Fickle is, it's not that he did more with less, but he had an easier path to get to the playoff than Tennessee would, going through the American. Did he? Through the American?
Well, through the American, the schedule.
And they beat Notre Dame on the road. Yeah.
Absolutely. The schedule is always going to be easier.
Right.
To go undefeated, let's say, in the American versus, you know, the SEC. But there's so much more to that if you're Luke Fickle trying to get Cincinnati in the playoff. Mind you, this has never happened before where a group of five team made the playoffs. So he had to go above and beyond.
Totally true.
And Cincinnati had to prove its mettle almost on a different plane beyond just the games that they were playing on Saturdays, just in order to get into that tournament. So he clearly, like, it's not supposed to be a situation where the committee takes into account previous seasons. But I think for a Cincinnati or for a Boise State, we had this argument for a long time with Boise State.
Yeah.
It was a years-long pattern of establishing credibility that made the committee feel comfortable with putting them in a big spot like that.
Built up the profile.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Fickle is responsible for that in a very big way. And Cincinnati made a commitment to football. And, you know, it's not just Fickle, but Fickle was the figurehead and the engine that made all of that feel okay to the committee to take that big step and put a G5 team in.
Yeah, it's how much credit do you give Fickle? And I give him a considerable amount of credit for the job he did at Cincinnati. And we'll certainly know more about him as a coach at a big place quite soon, by December, right? That's your metric. We'll certainly know more about a season by December.
We'll know a lot more by December, yeah.
Gotta know a lot more by December.
Always.
The thing is with Heupel is we haven't seen it on both sides of the ball in the way that we've seen it with Cincinnati. And if we're judging this, I think Fickle is a very capable recruiter. I think he did a very good job at Cincinnati. Cincinnati, not a small place. Let's be clear about that. It is a power conference school that has been relegated to a slightly less than power conference, according to me, these past few years. They're coming back to be a power conference school very shortly. So I'm going to say Fickle. I don't believe Josh Heupel could have taken Cincinnati to the playoff in the way that, and I believe Fickle could succeed at Tennessee and do what Josh Heupel has done at Tennessee. It would look different. The vision would be different. But I think if you swap them, I think I would take Fickle by a nose. How about that?
I mean, I think this kind of breaks your North Carolina rubric in a sense.
A little bit.
Because if you put Heupel at North Carolina, it would be fireworks right away.
Well,
it would be fireworks right away because he would be selling that offensive profile. The guy has clearly proven that he knows how to put an offense on the field. So that offense would pop pretty quick.
It already does pop at North Carolina.
It already does. But I'm saying if we're starting from some baseline where North Carolina is looking to retool, Josh Heupel gets at least one side of the ball cranking earlier than Luke Fickle. Luke Fickle, it's a slower build. It's a slower build, I think, if it's Fickle. It doesn't mean that in the long run he's any worse. But it's kind of coming at this from two different perspectives. I think Fickle is the answer. I think Fickle is the answer. And I also think that this is not the more interesting of the Fickle matchups that we're about to see.
Well, here's the other thing, too.
Because it could get interesting in the next round if we put Fickle through.
Josh Heupel has won with zero quarterbacks he's recruited. Now, it's a different era of college football.
Sure.
But we're talking about bringing in a developed quarterback from another Power 5 place, and that's his entire track record.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we have more of a concept that the other side of the ball for Luke Fickell is offense, and Cincinnati's offense, to me, has been more impressive by and large, maybe before this season, whatever, than Tennessee's defense.
Mm.
And so if that's a way of looking at it, if we're talking about North Carolina specifically, we've seen North Carolina with an NFL caliber quarterback and a crazy good offense. Not as good as Tennessee was at its best this season, but in terms of building a complete team, have we seen that from Josh Heupel
yet?
No,
we haven't. We haven't.
Not at Tennessee. Not at Tennessee. Yeah.
No. I think it's Fickell by a nose, but this is a very, very tight matchup for me.
Absolutely.
We're going to put Fickell through. The final matchup here in the first round of the East bracket is the number 2 seed, Ryan Day, against the number 7 seed, PJ Fleck.
Okay. Well, this is interesting, right? Because this is Ryan Day has done, by and large, a very good job continuing what Urban Meyer built in Columbus.
Yeah.
He's not in a good place right now in terms of losses to Michigan. Mm. They were right there to beat the national champion. Mm. Right there this past season. So PJ Fleck has had incredible highs. Minnesota, not traditionally a place where you can win 8, 9, 10 games with regularity, and he's done so. So the question to me is, what would PJ Fleck do at Ohio State? What would Ryan Day do at Minnesota? And what would each do at North Carolina? Because I both believe them to be very good recruiters. I think I don't love the Mike Sanford hire from a couple of years ago, but they've moved on from that in Minnesota. They've moved on from it. And I don't like Harry Coombs as a defensive coordinator. We've moved on from it.
Yeah.
So they've had a couple of hiccups, for sure. I think, man, if you ask the angriest, the saltiest Ohio State fans,
if you brought Ari Wasserman on this show, actually text Ari right now while we're doing.
You want me to text him?
Text Ari, tell him we're doing a bracket, a hypothetical matchup.
Okay.
Would you pick Ryan Day or PJ Fleck? I'm curious.
Who's
to get
the better coach in a vacuum?
Yeah.
Recording now. Ryan Day or PJ Fleck, and why?
Text Ari. Compelling audio here.
Yeah.
For those listening at home.
Sure. Well, so Ari will come to this from both, hopefully, a well thought out and an emotional place.
Yeah.
As somebody who says Ohio State is the most, what does he call the most underachieving program in America relative to perceived talent on hand?
That is correct. That is correct. Right. I'd be hard pressed to not go Ryan Day here.
I have an answer from Ari.
Already? Okay.
He's always just waiting around for my text.
Sure.
He says, these questions are so effing hard. That's all I can tell you.
That's all he's got.
And now I'm seeing the three dots. So he's got more coming.
Typing is taking place. I'd be hard pressed to not go Ryan Day. Because Ryan Day's still in his short time at Ohio State, he hasn't been there that long.
Right.
In his short time at Ohio State, he is taken the baton. He has recruited at an extremely high level. He's still putting guys in the league. He is still keeping Ohio State more than relevant, very much part of the national conversation. You'd be a fool to think that Ohio State is not a contender year in and year out. And that starts at the top. Now, there is an argument to be made that he's not maximizing talent. But to be fair, you could also make that same argument about PJ Fleck. PJ Fleck came in with vim and vigor and rowing the boat and the tie knot that's huge and a renewed sense of optimism for that Minnesota program. And Minnesota, for sure, is a pain in the ass. But I would argue if we're going to fight this battle on the field of which team has underachieved more, I feel like Minnesota has way underachieved more. Lesser talent, but there's no reason Minnesota's over-under. Year in and year out should be like 7.5. Like it was last year. I just feel like PJ Fleck has not really lived up to the billing. He's made that program better, but Ryan Day has just continued to produce at such a high level. Maybe in spite of any shortcomings as a coach, I just don't see how it can't be Day. What's Ari say?
All right. You ready? I'm doing the Ace Ventura soccer style kicker. Yeah. P.J. Fleck is the only one of the two who built a program, but I don't think P.J. Fleck could keep Ohio State afloat at the same rate. I guess P.J. Fleck probably has to get the nod because he's the only one who actually built something, but I'd still take Ryan Day over Fleck to run Ohio State. And then I said, who would do better at North Carolina? That's our goodest top 20 program. He says, probably Day, because he'd have them scoring 45 points a game.
Yeah, I think Day is the answer here.
Okay.
But again,
I'm with you.
Again, here's the thing. And here's why this is such an interesting thought exercise. Yeah. The Fickell-Heupel matchup was great. The Fleck-Day matchup, a lot better than you'd expect.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an interesting exercise. Let's go back to the top of the bracket and talk it out between Dabo Swinney and Chip Kelly, Dan.
Dabo and Chip. Okay.
Yeah.
So I suppose this is a question of, it's automatically Dabo because he's won national championships.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next 5 years, I still think I'm more confident in Dabo than Chip. Dabo at Dabo's place and Chip at Chip's place, even though, you know, the Big Ten's going to be weird for UCLA.
Yeah.
And I think there might be some opportunity there, but I still think it's going to be too difficult for UCLA to take the next step from where they are now in the Big Ten in 2 years. I'm taking Dabo, and I don't know if I have a specific case for Chip because Dabo has won more and has found better quarterbacks by and large. And it's just Dabo has just done more recently. And so that to me is it. If I'm going to say, what is it about Chip that you would have it over Dabo? It's, well, if you're looking forward the next 5 years and Clemson has quarterback uncertainty right now, even though you're firmly ticketed in the club level, Cade Klubnik, that you can say, well, Chip made a change at defensive coordinator. You know, he keeps improving. This is finally his program, whatever it is, 5 years in, and it's all downhill from here, I guess. That would be the case, that you're just out on Clemson and the recent coordinator hires, and you just don't see it happening. But the better coach, hard to make a case against Dabo.
I think the move to go out and get Garrett Riley was cold-blooded.
It's great.
Cold-blooded. I didn't think he had it in him. We saw it before, and again, I know it's been compared to when he went out and got Chet Morris, but the Garrett Riley hire was cold-blooded, and for as much as we like to make fun of Dabo for some of the cheese ball stuff he does, that definitely proved that he's still got it, that he's committed to not resting on his laurels and his success at Clemson and trying to make the program better.
Right.
Even the move to go more in the direction of Cade Klubnik, knowing that you've got a guy like DJU who's been very successful. You know, maybe not quite as successful.
Wait, are you saying DJU has been very successful? Is that a term you're using?
I got a little out over my skis.
Okay, I was going to give you an opportunity to walk it back a little bit. Yeah.
DJU is a guy who came in, obviously, with much acclaim and for sure underachieved. Had the opportunity to be very successful in that program, but definitely fell short of expectations. Nonetheless, is a guy who was there for a while, is a guy who, by all accounts, is a pretty good locker room guy, was one of the leaders of that team. To move in a different direction by season's end to Cade Klubnik took balls. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's got to be one of the hardest things that a coach has to do, to move away from a veteran quarterback and to go in a different direction. So I give Dabo a lot of credit for some of the moves that he made here over the last, let's just say, year, last season, that definitely made me feeling more comfortable about the state of affairs at Clemson. It's very easy to look at a program that's been as successful as the Clemson Tigers and wonder, because we've done it here, what's it going to take for this thing to fall apart? Right? It's going to be transfers. It's going to be guys not coming to Clemson. Maybe the recruiting game falling off. Maybe in the case like Dabo saw last year, drop off with some top flight assistants going elsewhere.
Sure.
He had a lot of things kind of happen at once, and it was still a program that did really, really well last season. Maybe not national championship caliber, still won the ACC.
Yeah.
Still played pretty damn well. Maybe not against Notre Dame. Fine by me. But all things considered, I thought still a really good season, and it seems like they are primed for big things in 23. So for me, the answer here is Dabo. I like Chip, but I think if you put both of them at North Carolina, again, our goodest program,
Our goodest program.
I think Dabo's the one who boots that program up the quickest.
Chip Kelly might be a better fit for North Carolina.
Probably.
From like a personality and like will roll with it, is not going to be a ruthless recruiter, is going to hit the portal hard. You know, Dabo's not. So that's the other thing on Dabo. It's not just the hires. It's the not willing to necessarily play the roster game that everybody else is playing.
Yeah.
It's the stubbornness, whereas Chip Kelly's all in. They're the two sides of the coin here.
Yeah.
Where you're saying, okay, the next 5 years, Chip might be the better fit at North Carolina, very similar school to UCLA, a basketball power, academics, everything like that. That you can say, well, in that specific element of our rubric, Chip might be the answer moving forward. I don't know. Right. But that's interesting to think about, I guess.
Here is the matchup that I had circled.
Okay.
Number 2, Ryan Day. Number 3, Luke Fickell. The Battle of Ohio State Brethren, Dan.
Yeah.
There was a moment in time not too long ago where there were rumors about Ryan Day maybe being interested in a job like the Chicago Bears. Mm-hmm. And some chitter chatter out there that maybe Luke Fickell will be the guy that would take over the program.
Chitter chatter. Ty, this is a family show.
Maybe it'd be Luke Fickell gets that gig. Luke Fickell now head coach at Wisconsin. So does not seem likely that will happen anytime soon, even if Day does decide to go elsewhere. But who's a better coach? Who do you want in a pinch? Do you want Ryan Day? Do you want Luke Fickell?
I think Fickell at a big place would recruit really, really well. I think one of the big things that people have written about Luke Fickell is the relationships that he built up in the state of Ohio, and that he was pretty relentless and he was personable and available and all those things. He did a very good job. So I think he would do very good at a large place in terms of roster construction and hit the portal hard with Wisconsin. I think it's Luke Fickell. I think at this moment, it's Luke Fickell. And I say that knowing that Ohio State was, I mean, we're going to say we could pencil in Ohio State as a national championship if they got TCU. I suppose that would be fair to do, Ty.
Sure.
With the data that we have at this point. Ohio State was a missed field goal away from winning the national championship this year. But that's, you know, that also falls under the, like, if I had wheels, I'd be a bicycle corollary.
Right.
So I think Luke Fickell. I think Luke Fickell, because of the way he built that program up, because of the nature of a G5 program never making the playoff, because of how complete a team Cincinnati built at its best under Luke Fickell, roster-wise, results-wise, I mean, damn, Sauce Gardner has been one of the best corners the past 5 years, 10 years in the sport. Mm. He's been incredible. So you look at some of those, you know, NFL-caliber data points with Cincinnati and Luke Fickell. I think that's my answer, because I think if you gave Luke Fickell Cincinnati and you gave, Ryan Day Cincinnati and Luke Fickell Ohio State. Now, we did see a season of Luke Fickell at Ohio State many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
So that has to be considered. But at this point in their careers, I think Luke Fickell's ability to take a top 20 roster and turn them into an 11-1 team and not a perfect roster, which at times Ohio State seems to have, at least on paper, I think I would give the nod to Fickell there. So I'm going Luke Fickell.
Yeah, when Luke Fickell got that gig at Ohio State for that one season, he was like 36 years old. He had been with Jim Tressel since 2002. This is how far back, how deep the water runs here.
Right.
With Luke Fickell and that Ohio State job, but was with Jim Tressel starting in 2002. Obviously had the cup of coffee in 2011 as the head coach. And was with Ohio State and Urban Meyer up until he eventually took that Cincinnati job
right
in 2017. So he has been in proximity to incredible Ohio State success for most of his coaching career. And before that, I think was at Akron. The guy is from Columbus, Ohio, so he's got a lot of familiarity with that program. This is not a thought exercise about what would Luke Fickell do at Ohio State, but I think he is a bit of an unsung Titan, let's say, in the coaching world.
Wow.
That maybe has not gotten his due because he's been behind the scenes for a good long time at Ohio State and has been coaching at a quote-unquote smaller, quote-unquote G5 school in Cincinnati for the last 5-6 seasons, right? I agree.
The case for Day is also very clear, but continue.
I think it's a very, very close matchup, but I think I give the nod to Fickell. I think I give the nod to Fickle. Luke Fickle and his ability to prove that he can build something big at Cincy and get to a big spot.
Mm-hmm.
Far and away is the most impressive thing between these two coaches, in my view. Now, that being said, what's fair is fair on the Ryan Day front. We talked about a little bit on the last episode. Being able to take the baton from your predecessor and run with it and elevate it to a degree is something that we don't talk enough about.
Certainly the offense, yeah.
Certainly the offense is very, very impressive. So I think what he's done at Ohio State has been admirable. There is a case to be made that you could put a lot of people at Ohio State and they would do just as well.
Right.
I think Fickle is the answer for me. I think this is an upset.
The slipper still fits!
I think I go a 3-2 here with Fickle.
Okay, so a couple things with Ohio State that we should credit Ryan Day for, and that's quarterback development, that's offensive development, and we saw some unusual, but up and down quarterback play under Urban Meyer, and I think that was more of the vision than anything else. But in, you know, the Dwayne Haskins and CJ Stroud and now whoever's going to be the head or the signal caller moving forward, I think they've been legit incredible by and large.
No.
They've been legit incredible at quarterback and with that offense, and they essentially never lose to an average to below average or terrible team. They've lost, you know, in the past couple of years, they lost to Oregon and Michigan during the regular season. Am I forgetting anybody? I know I'm putting you on the spot. I screwed up the Florida State thing and now I'm paranoid. But they lose to Oregon last year. They lose to Michigan in consecutive seasons. Luke Fickle has built something. Ryan Day has continued something. You can say anybody could, you know, attract that level of talent to Columbus. It's probably true, but Ryan Day in practice actually has.
Yeah.
Anybody can win in Columbus. Yes, but Ryan Day actually has. And so I think a lot of people have produced subpar seasons with an incredible roster, and Ryan Day has produced incredible seasons. So I know they're not considered incredible to Ohio State fans because of the losses to Michigan, but I still think he is a full-on great coach. So
we're that's going what Fickle. Was difficult we going for Fickle?
Me. I think I'm going Fickle here.
What about Dabo or Fickle?
Dabo.
I think it's Dabo. It's got to be Dabo, right?
I think we're like through. 2 years removed from there being the question of like, are we just going to see Clemson and Alabama in the national championship every year?
Yeah.
Obviously, we're not, but
it's got to be Dabo here.
You win national championships, you attract those quarterbacks, you bring those recruiting classes to a place in Clemson that has traditionally not been anywhere near a consistent power atop the sport. And so that to me is the big thing, that he's hired near the end of the 2000s. He's an interim guy. He gets the full job tag and takes them 3, 4, 5 pegs above anywhere they've been, at least since like the early 80s. I don't have the record book in front of me. You can look that up as I'm doing this, since like the Danny Ford era. So I am in on Dabo over any sort of replacement at this point at Clemson, at North Carolina, whatever. It's Dabo Sweeney. And if there's anybody who I feel, even with his reluctance to hit the portal and keep his program modern and be ruthless with all of his assistant hires, not just Brent Venables way back when and Garrett Riley this past year, if he were that all the time and hit the portal, I would have zero doubt that Clemson's going to be back to being a 4-team playoff, 12-team playoff, whatever type program sooner rather than later.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's go to the Southeast bracket, Dan, our final bracket. We got
it's so
move
boring
quick.
That we have, what, Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh, and Dabo so far as our region winners?
This bracket, I think, is going to get weird.
Okay.
I could see this one getting weird, not necessarily with it being like a six seed coming out of it, but.
Right.
Number one, Southeast bracket, Kirby Smart. Number eight, Lane Kiffin.
Hmm.
It's an interesting matchup. It's the kind of matchup which would play well on social media for sure. Yeah. The answer is Kirby Smart. The answer's got to be Kirby Smart. Two-time defending national champion. It's got to be Kirby Smart. His defenses have been ridiculous at a historic level. He's won two championships with Stetson Bennett, who literally was a walk-on.
Mm-hmm.
His ability to adapt, to continue to recruit at a very high level, it's got to be Kirby Smart. It has to be Kirby.
Show me the record book of Kirby Smart's time at FAU. Show me what Kirby has done in Boca.
Yeah.
Show me. No, Lane's career has been topsy-turvy, and he's a very good coach who will continue to do, I believe, good things in Oxford or wherever he ends up next, because he will end up somewhere next. This is not a full long-term situation to me. But the best of Lane Kiffin is interesting, but the answer is Kirby Smart, because he has taken a good program and made them the gold standard. And that is incredible. That is incredible. Georgia is a terrific program. It was before he arrived and has taken them to heights in the modern era.
Yep.
That they have come nowhere near, and everybody is measuring themselves at this point against Georgia. And that includes Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama and everybody else, Oklahoma, who's winning. Oregon just hired their defensive coordinator a little over a year ago. Everybody's measuring up against Georgia. And so there will be a conversation later in this episode, but at this point, it's the job he's done has been pretty much unparalleled these past 5 years.
I hate to just dismiss Kiffin like that, but the answer is Kirby.
Yep.
The answer is always Kirby. Number four, Southeast bracket, Matt Rhule. Number five, Mark Stoops at Kentucky.
This is really difficult.
This is extraordinarily difficult. So look, the impossibility of Matt Rhule turning around both Temple and a decimated Baylor program.
Yeah.
Is almost the most impressive thing of any of the coaches here that we're talking about.
Sure.
That singular act on two accounts is incredible.
Yes.
Temple's been horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor was in a horrible place. So the fact that he turned both programs around as quickly as he did was really impressive. Thankfully, for our purposes here, we're not looking into what Matt Rhule did with the Panthers. That was not so good.
Right.
But we will have an opportunity this season to see what he can do in Lincoln, Nebraska. So Matt Rhule, that in and of itself is very, very incredible. But the Mark Stoops thing is also incredible in its own right. Kentucky's a basketball school. And I don't mean that from a place of disrespect, but it just is. People hear Kentucky, they think of basketball. This is a program that had been down and out for a long time. And he has very slowly, you want to talk about crockpotting, very slowly built that program up to a level of success where had Will Levis, they had the Liam Cohen years, You know, we're going to see what happens with Devin Leary and Liam Cohen round two. The defense has been solid. They've put guys in the league. The level for this program, the floor for this program has pretty consistently gone up, gone higher over the last, you know, five, six seasons. It's been a really nice turnaround for that program, but it's been slow and it's been steady. And it maybe hasn't been with the fireworks of a guy like a Rule taking over Baylor. So which of those two coaches do you favor in this setup?
Matt Rule. And I think Mark Stoops has done a very, very good job at Kentucky. But this was a Kentucky program that was like, they would have losing seasons. They would go 2-9 or whatever, 5-7. They would go 7-6, 8-4. They were an average program, I would say, is where Kentucky largely was. You know, whether it's, you're looking, I mean, Joker Phillips was not good. Goes 2-10 in his final season. And Mark Stoops goes 2-10 in his first season. It was the way he built up the program to a, I think, legitimate, mostly dangerous program in the SEC has been quite impressive. But Matt Rule, with the depths to which Baylor fell after, you know, Briles and Jim Grobe, and then what he did at Temple for sure. I mean, Al Golden had them in a pretty good spot beforehand, but I think Matt Rule is incredible. I mean, he is your bar rescue. He is your John Taffer. He is, if you need to squeeze blood out of a rock, Matt Rule's your dude. And so getting the most out of a roster. Now, Mark Stoops is a better recruiter to me, but getting the most out of the roster, hiring well, you know, I love my Phil Snow hire. We have that sound effect somewhere with that deep, what that defense turned into at Baylor and the NFL players that were on that defense for Temple. Was that a Hassan Riddick? Was that, did he overlap?
It may have. Yes.
I may be screwing this up. I don't remember, but there was somebody else. There was another edge rusher for Temple. Oh. You can go back in the annals.
I don't know. I forget his name. I know who you mean.
But yeah, it's Matt Rule. Matt Rule is at North Carolina. I am more confident in Matt Rule turning them into a dangerous team via whatever that defense turns into 2-3 years in. And even though the Baylor offenses were not that fun with Matt Rule, they were good enough mostly to, I mean, win the conference. They were right there to win the conference.
I mean, so the answer is Rule. The answer is Rule. And I do want to make sure we make something clear on the Temple front. There was a cup of coffee in between Al Golden and Matt Rule named Steve Adazio.
Of course.
That did not go well.
Dudes. Yeah.
And so you're right to say that Golden had that program in a great place.
It was more just to say it wasn't unprecedented.
No. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Matt Rule did. Yeah.
The problems that Temple has had is maintaining success, right?
Yep.
For as quickly as they've been able to achieve it with Golden, with Rule, it's very easy at a place like that, if you miss on a couple guys, for the whole bottom to fall out.
Right.
And we saw that with Adazio, right? It was fine until it wasn't. And then they were looking for a guy. So Matt Rule came in his first season at Temple, 2-10, his next season, 6-6, then two double-digit win seasons, right? Before going over to Baylor, and it followed a very, very similar pattern. That's just damn impressive. I think the answer's got to be Rule here.
The answer's Rule, and it was Matt Rule with Hassan Reddick. And the other Temple player I remember being especially good was, I had to look this up. This is a blast from the past name, Tyler. Tyler Matakavich,
yeah.
Good one. Matakavich. Linebacker. Okay.
Number two, Lincoln Riley. Number seven, Jonathan Smith.
Okay. Lincoln Riley has taken team to a playoff, has won a bunch of conferences, Heisman's number one draft picks.
Recruiting.
Figure out, other than the 2020 season, couldn't really figure out defense. Recruited well. Absolutely recruited well. In terms of where they'd be at North Carolina.
Lincoln Riley at this point has status, right? He's got status. If you're a big-time quarterback recruit, you're at least going to sniff around Lincoln Riley, see if he's interested.
Of course.
Right. So he'd be able to boot things up pretty quickly. He has booted things up quickly at USC just with the talent that he's attracted. So there's no reason to expect that if he went to a place like Carolina, really anywhere, that he couldn't do the same. So I think he's the answer there. I think the obvious answer is Lincoln Riley.
But I don't know. I'm not there.
But I also want to give kudos to Jonathan Smith and the job that he's done at Oregon State, because, you know, like 6 weeks ago when we're doing a show talking about transfers and quarterbacks and which program is a quarterback away or which program could potentially be a dark horse in the 23 season, we all called out Oregon State because he has built that program into a pretty stable spot. Before last season, I remember you and I talking about, oh my God, the defense is going to be catastrophe. Defense was actually pretty good this past season.
Yeah.
I mean, he did
He
did a good job at Oregon State last season. He's continued to do a good job in the entire span of time that he's been there. So, you know, though I think Riley is the easy answer here, it is one that probably deserves a little bit of thought before just automatically putting him through, because Jonathan Smith, there are many other matchups here where Jonathan Smith would win.
The question to me is, if you put them at North Carolina, you would get an offense that puts up a ton of points and potentially an embarrassing, catastrophic defense, which is where North Carolina already is. They're and already has
there.
Been.
They're already there.
With Sam Howell and Drake May. And so, look, they attracted five-star quarterbacks at North Carolina, and they scored a bunch of points, had a bunch of great skill players. What is different? I mean, he's going to bring Alex Grinch with him to Chapel Hill? What is going to be so different about North Carolina that they're just going to be able to recruit on a slightly lesser scale because it's not as big a place as USC or Oklahoma? They're going to get great quarterbacks often and have great offenses every season, likely every season, although we can hold the Spencer Rattler year against Lincoln Riley. That was his guy. That wasn't a transfer. Baker Mayfield transfers in. Kyler Murray transfers in. Jalen Hurts transfers in. I don't know. If you're talking about who can get me to 9 wins more often over a 5-year span and build the more complete team, Lincoln Riley will out-recruit Jonathan Smith. In terms of making savvy hires to build a full roster of coaches, I think Jonathan Smith, if you're giving them the same roster...
Oh, man, I just can't get behind this. I can't get behind this at all.
I've got Oklahoma fans nodding along. I've got USC fans who have long unsubscribed from the show. I've got Oregon State fans feeling themselves a little bit in this conversation.
I can't get behind this. Because what you didn't mention is what Jonathan Smith would do at North Carolina.
That's what I just said.
What you didn't mention is what would happen if you put him in that situation. Right? We talked a lot about Lincoln Riley, but Jonathan Smith, he's not attracting that kind of talent to Chapel Hill. Are you kidding me?
But he would develop quarterbacks.
We're going to get Ben Gulbrandson East. And
how many games did Oregon State win this past year, Ty?
I don't know. Was it 9? 8, 9?
Oregon State football. ESPN 2022. That's how I'm searching this, Ty. I'm going to be as specific as possible because I'm pretty sure they won double-digit games. They went 10-3 if you include the 30-3 thrashing over 11 Florida walk-ons.
Right.
Ben Gulbrandson and Chance Nolan,
right,
at quarterback.
Right.
So if at North Carolina, he's got a random four-star quarterback from Charlotte or somewhere on the East Coast.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think I'm...
Lincoln Riley's putting number one picks into the NFL. He is pumping.
What do you think Drake May is going to be drafted?
Heisman Trophy winners. The answer is Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley is the answer here.
I'm just not there with you. I'm disagreeing. We can move Lincoln Riley through. But I think when I'm sitting back with my bracket.
This is a spicy take from you. Here, I'll play.
10 wins with Ben Gulbrandson?
I'll play this.
Gulbrandson?
It's a nice Cinderella story, but Lincoln Riley's the answer.
If you put Sam Howell, if you put Caleb Williams, if you put any of the, if you put Jalen Hurts on this past year's Oregon State team, what are we talking about, Ty?
Okay. So look, let's move Riley through because you're going to have an opportunity again.
To pick against him?
Yes. A couple.
I think he's a really good coach. I'm just, you're measuring him against somebody who's done an incredible job at a place where it's very difficult.
The final matchup, the winner of this matchup gets Lincoln Riley in round two. It's number 3, Lance Leipold. It's number 6, Kirk Ferentz.
Kirk Ferentz, Lance Leipold.
Yeah.
Both have been head coaches for quite some time.
Yep.
One of whom at the same place for quite some time.
Quite some time, maybe too long.
I don't know, man. If you put Kirk Ferentz at North Carolina or Kansas, I think Kansas would improve. I do. But the job Lance Leipold has done and the aggression and the culture and everything that comes with the turnaround stories, Buffalo and now Kansas. And it's a short track record with Kansas, mind you, at a Power 5 place.
This is really difficult.
If you've been at your one stop long enough to have to do your own bar rescue, that seems like a problem in this conversation.
Right, but
seems like a problem in this conversation. Lance Leipold is the answer. It has to be the answer here.
Okay, so Iowa has had an undefeated Power 5 season, regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Ton of draft picks.
Yep.
Ton of terrific assistant hires. If the best of Kirk Ferentz, whenever that was at the worst of Kansas or North Carolina, I think I'm going Leipold still. I think I'm going Lance Leipold. That track record, I think the ability to adapt, the ability to inspire, the stubborn streak with Kirk Ferentz right now, if you're asking me who's a better coach, even with, look, we talk about the degree of difficulty, Ty. Right? Like, oh, this place, this school never wins. The degree of difficulty to win 9, 8, 9, 10 games without an offense, on a certain level, you got to tip your cap because that's really tough to do.
Sure.
When you care so little about updating, modernizing, adjusting, recruiting, when you care that little about roster improvement and system and vision improvement, it's admirable. And Iowa's not a place where I don't think a lot of people can win. That's barely English. I'm still going Leipold. But I am tipping my cap to that degree of difficulty and the games ending in the right column.
Right. I mean, look, Kirk Ferentz on this list of active winning coaches is second only behind, or third, excuse me, only behind Nick Saban and Mac Brown.
Sure.
He's been at Iowa since 1999. He's been there a long time. But he's been successful. He's won 61% of his games. To be a steadying force the way he has at Iowa has been, I think, impressive. And the best of Kirk Ferentz, yeah, for sure. If you put him at Kansas, you put him at North Carolina, you put him almost anywhere, he will make the program better. He runs a very, very rigid system. And
what about today, though?
That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going with this. There are many programs out there that, frankly, could use a little rigidity and could use a little bit more organization.
Yep.
And so those skills are definitely transferable to other places. Not all places, but some. There are programs that would stand to improve from that. But I also think the best of Kirk Ferentz is behind us. And Leipold, if anything, is proving that there is room to grow there.
Mm-hmm.
To turn Kansas around in the manner that he did, never mind the fact that they didn't play any defense this year. The fact that they played legit offense, I just checked the stats here while we were going through this. The ninth overall SP plus offense at Kansas. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me with that? The fact that he did it as quickly as he did.
Which I think is easier to do.
It might be easier to do, but Kansas was starting from such a low point that to build them up to a legit, legit offense. This wasn't smoke and mirrors. They're very good.
Yeah.
It's got to be Lance Leipold. But that means that Lance Leipold in round two squares off against Lincoln Riley, Dan.
Leipold. Leipold.
Going Leipold?
I don't know, actually. Well, mostly because I had Lincoln Riley losing in the previous round. So
he's a soft two in your bracket here.
So Jonathan Smith has accomplished more to me than Lance Leipold. Even though Kansas has, you know, I mean, Oregon State, what, they trounced Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl? Like, this is not, you know, they've beaten top ranked USC teams as a program, you know, the Rogers brothers, whatever. They've had some really interesting highs. But Lance Leipold, couple years in at Kansas, taking over program late, right? Late in the the calendar for taking over a team. At North Carolina. Man.
It's tough, right?
This one's tougher to me. I think I'm going to go Lincoln Riley.
I still think the highs of Lincoln Riley are higher. I think totally. Lance Leipold, if you're looking to build up a program, Lance Leipold's the guy. But if you're looking to take a program that's already doing decently enough, already still attracting talent and level them up, 10X them, I think it's Lincoln Riley.
Well, I think he's the roster is going to be populated better, quicker with Lincoln Riley, with the portal and through high school recruiting. And yeah, it to me, it's just an Iron Chef versus Chopped situation that Lance Leipold's going to win you Chopped every time. But, you know, with the best ingredients, with the best situations, under the best circumstances, yeah, I would take Lincoln Riley.
I still think I'd take Lincoln Riley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt Rhule versus Kirby Smart.
So, can Kirby Smart turn around Temple and Baylor? Definitely.
Definitely.
Definitely. Now.
Definitely.
He would never find himself in that situation. At least hasn't been anywhere near those types of situations with the high profile nature of being the Alabama defensive coordinator and the NFL experience, whatever. But I think in terms of being able to bring in talent, being able to figure out a defense, which is what Matt Rhule was able to do at Temple and at Baylor. Did Temple beat Notre Dame?
No, I was like at that game. Notre Dame won that game, but
they barely survived Temple. Yeah.
Barely. Yeah.
That's right. It must have been in Philly. Yeah. Yeah. I think Kirby Smart could figure out how to recruit players to a school, a major place in Texas. Yes. So I think Kirby Smart would probably outperform Matt Rhule at Baylor eventually if you gave him 4 or 5 years to build up that roster. So my answer is we have the data points on Matt Rhule to know that he can do an incredible thing with his back against the wall, but I think Kirby Smart would find better players and do that. So I'm going to say Kirby Smart and figure out offense in a way that I don't know if Matt Rhule has necessarily done.
That brings us to our final Elite Eight matchup, the final of the Southeast bracket.
Okay.
It's Kirby Smart, Lincoln Riley.
Kirby.
It's got to be Kirby. Right? We don't need to spend too much time talking about this. If we are expending any energy on Lincoln Riley versus Jonathan Smith or Lincoln Riley versus Lance Leipold, surely we have nothing to say when it comes to Lincoln Riley against Kirby Smart. Lincoln Riley, very good coach. Kirby Smart, he's just different at this point. His program is different and he's proven he knows how to do it. He can build a defense. We know that for sure.
Right.
And he can win with Stetson Bennett, which is definitely something that Lincoln Riley has never had to worry about.
Right.
So the answer is Kirby Smart.
Well, okay, so here is the only pushback I can give you, even though I agree with you. The only pushback I can give you is Kirby Smart's last however many 15 years or whatever have been fully charmed.
Sure.
In that, he's been able to call a defense at a place with the best players. The best collection of talent over a 10, 15-year span has been at Alabama. And he was able to call those defenses for a chunk of that stretch. And then he moves on to a place within the SEC that is not going to have a budget, that is located in arguably the most talented state for talent outside of maybe Florida and Texas. I don't even know. I don't know where Georgia stands, but right now it's in a pretty incredible place. So it's in a talent-rich place at a school that will write him a blank check for anything he wants, assistance, facilities, whatever, that at least with Lincoln Riley, as terrific a program, as all-time a program as Oklahoma very much is, he doesn't have that backyard thing that Kirby has at Georgia, right? Oklahoma's next to Texas. Georgia's next to Florida. I get all that. But I think you can say Lincoln Riley helped to build Oklahoma into something different after Bob Stoops, who had it as a great program. And he's done it now with USC being right there for the Pac-12 before they started playing two-hand touch against Utah.
That's right.
He's done it at a couple places. And so that would be the only case for Lincoln Riley that he has figured out quarterback, which is a part of my rubric, Ty, I should say.
No.
Now, he's relied on transfers, and Kirby's tried to rely on transfers and didn't work out. I'm there with Lincoln Riley. If you're saying over 10 years, who's going to find more quarterbacks? And I always think the coach who can figure out quarterback more often is going to win more. But still, it's Kirby Smart.
It's Kirby Smart. I mean,
that's a knock against Kirby, though. The quarterback situation
Yeah.
is not amazing. Letting Fields get away, you know, having Jamie Newman opt out, having JT Daniels not work out and be unable to stay on the field. Maybe it's just bad luck. The Dwan Mathis thing.
It's really the one thing. And maybe we'll find out this year, whether it's Carson Beck or Brock Vandegrift or who knows who else. We'll find out what it looks like starting anew without Stetson Bennett and what that offense looks like. But to the point of Lincoln Riley and maybe not having talent in the backyard, it hasn't really stopped him. Caleb Williams is from D.C. Caleb Williams wanted to go and play for Lincoln Riley first at Oklahoma, then at USC. He's got that kind of gravitas. He's been putting guys in the league. He's been winning Heisman trophies. You know, he certainly has the quarterback thing figured out. He is at least at a minimum convinced people that he's got the quarterback thing figured out. Right. The stats would back that up, but that reputation clearly precedes him. What Kirby's done at Georgia has been unbelievable the last two seasons. I mean, we are going to come to a point here, I presume, in the next 5 to 10 minutes or so where we're talking about master versus apprentice, Kirby Smart against Lord Nick Saban.
Yeah.
That will be a very interesting debate to have, but let's put Kirby through.
Let's put Kirby through. And remember, we're a Devontae Smith against cover two catch away from potentially Kirby having three national championships.
Kirby Smart against Dabo Sweeney. Ooh.
Dabo has a track record.
Dabo's got a track record.
Done it longer.
Done it
both
longer.
Both have two.
Done it longer. I'm trying to unpack the personalities of these guys. I think both are cutthroat in different ways.
I think that's right.
I think Dabo's kind of got that aw shucksy, as I said earlier.
You don't think, Ty. You know.
Cheese ball cutthroat quality to him. I know. Yeah, he does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Kirby Smart at a poker table is an interesting debate. I kind of feel like Kirby is the type of guy who'd smile to your face and then enjoy stabbing you in the back.
Of course.
And I almost don't mean that in a negative way. That's just where we're at with college football. Got to have that killer instinct if you want to win at this level. You know, like Kirby Smart to me is somebody that I would have trouble trusting at a poker table.
Yeah.
Guy who could bluff his way through almost anything. Seems like he's the kind of guy with a good poker face.
Yeah.
And that killer instinct has served him well in his time at Georgia. If you are putting both at North Carolina, who do you think is more likely to figure it out quicker? Kirby has the track record at this point of being a two-time now defending national championship.
The recent track record, yeah.
Recent track record. Dabo's also won that title. You know, we've both been at media days where Georgia's there and Clemson's there. The Clemson guys, to a man, all seem to be having a lot more fun. Whereas... Sure. The Georgia team or really a Saban team, and they're kind of in the same mold here where it's more business, right? The culture is a little bit different, though both are very successful. So it just seems like, again, and we talk about this often with Dabo, a little bit more informal around the program, still very successful, but the cultures are different. The recent track record is a little bit different, though not that much different. I'd have a hard time not putting Kirby Smart through here. Because of the recent track record.
I think I'm with you. I just don't want us to gloss over the best of Clemson.
No.
That even when they don't have a quarterback, you can argue that Georgia, in that they just sort of got lucky that Stetson Bennett, the elder statesman of this all, they got lucky that this walk-on diehard Georgia fan refused to leave Georgia when it appeared he was never going to play. And so... for whatever reason, it worked out.
Yeah.
The best of Clemson has figured out quarterback, went to the playoff, even when they didn't have a great quarterback, went to the playoff. And so...
played against easier teams, easier competition.
Easier competition.
But, sure, to get to the playoff, still an accomplishment.
Definitely. And Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, both Heisman-caliber quarterbacks, and I would argue... Stetson Bennett, by the end of his career, was a Heisman caliber quarterback. He was invited to New York. The best, though, and that tracker to be there for as long as he's been there. I think it's very easy to say it's Kirby Smart because these past couple years. But man, it's not just the what are you doing at the top of your time. It's how long is the top of your time lasting?
Sure.
And it's been a few years now for Kirby and Georgia. And they're on the, we're in an active streak. But what Dabo has done at Clemson is nearly impossible to do at the top of the sport. I say nearly because somebody else is also doing it in Nick Saban.
Right.
So it hasn't, there hasn't been that run like that at Ohio State. There hasn't been that run like that. I mean, you, Pete Carroll had a few years, but did not last as long as what Dabo's done at Clemson. Hasn't happened at Oklahoma. Hasn't happened at all of these major places. Did not happen at Florida State. Huge high, fell off a cliff. You know, you have the Florida stretch. Huge high, fell off a cliff. And so what Dabo's done at Clemson is all time. And I'm not positive Kirby's going to do it at Georgia. But I have no reason to believe he can't. And we're, because we're in the midst of this historic stretch, I'm saying Kirby. I'm saying Kirby because Dabo's quote-unquote downtime is happening at the same time as Kirby's uptime. And so I'm just, I'm going to be a prisoner of the moment. I'm going to ride the wave.
Well, I think we have to be prisoners of the moment.
Yeah.
This is a tournament, man.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't matter who the best team was between November and the end of February when it comes down to it in the NCAA tournament. It's who's playing the best out there on the first Thursday or the first Friday.
And we also saw these two teams play against each other last year.
Yep.
By last year, I mean 2021, not 2022. Last year. Or 2 years ago now. And Kirby had a few years to build a roster. Dabo most certainly had a few years to build a roster. Do you remember how many touchdowns Clemson scored in that game on offense?
Was it zero?
It was zero.
Yeah.
Do you remember how many touchdowns Georgia scored on offense that game?
Like five?
It was also zero, Ty. It was also zero. They won the game, I think, 10-3 or something like that. It was a pick six that DJU threw. But If you're gonna score zero offensive touchdowns, be the team that wins. And so we saw that was Georgia. So that's my answer, Kirby coming out of that half.
That brings us. We knew it was headed here. Our coach's bracket final.
Yeah.
Number one overall seed, Nick Saban. Number two seed, Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
An interesting matchup. Saban, of course, was Kirby's boss for a while. Kirby took over at Georgia, has gotten the better of Saban now. A couple years running here.
Mm-hmm.
Has won two national championships. Still has ways to go to catch up to Saban 7 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But you're talking about the greatest coach of all time in Nick Saban. And you're talking about his very capable and perhaps even better understudy, Kirby Smart. Kirby's ability to build a carbon copy of Alabama has been pretty impressive at Georgia. A lot of coaches are hired to a new place because of their proximity to greatness. And we've talked about that here a couple times over. Not every one of those guys can replicate the success, can build the same thing at another place. That's hard to do. That's hard to do. To institute the same kind of culture, right? We just talked about the culture. That's really hard to do. I think Kirby gets points for that. Not to say Saban has not done that everywhere he's been, because Saban has been a winning coach pretty much everywhere with the exception of the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
Certainly at the college level, there's a reason that we talk about him as the greatest coach of all time. He's the greatest coach of all time. But at least for the moment, we've seen Kirby in this new era of college football with transfers and NIL and frankly, the Wild West out there. We've seen him replicate that success that Saban's had at Alabama and do it pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That deserves a lot of praise. The Saban thing is remarkable because year in and year out, he has to deal with mass turnover. I mean, just mass turnover that no other coach has to deal with. He's got coaches coming in there. Tommy Rees taking over as the offensive coordinator. Tommy Rees wants to be a head coach within the next 3 to 5 years. He's going to leave too.
Sure.
Right. Anybody they bring in there to run things wants to be a coach somewhere. And he has dealt with that almost without breaking a sweat. So his ability to adapt, I think, is like the anti-Ferentz. He's just proven time and again that it doesn't matter what you throw at him. He's got that program at critical mass. He's got that program to a point where they can withstand some of these weird personnel things that he's had to deal with. I think for both these guys, it's almost unfair to pick one over the other, but What do you think?
I'll do it. It's Nick Saban.
Yeah.
I'll do it because the greatest team Georgia has ever built, last year's team, lost to Nick Saban's team by 17 points. Was it 17 points? What was the final score? Like 41-24 in the SEC championship game? Right. I know they lost a couple of weeks later in the national championship game. There was an exclamation point put on that win by the Keeley Ringo pick six. But Alabama beat them. Yeah. Alabama beat them on a neutral field in Atlanta. And so I don't think last year's Alabama team or 2021's Alabama team was better than Georgia's team, but they did beat them. And so if that is the high point of the Kirby Smart career, Nick Saban was a data point on a loss there. So Nick Saban's done it since essentially 2009. You know, 08, I think they lose to Utah in the Sugar Bowl. Was that 08? I believe it was 08. And 07 was, you know, a growth year. But since then, since the end of 2008,
yeah,
they've just been an all-time wrecking crew. And so it's Nick Saban. You can mention any head coach ever, and I'd probably take Nick Saban without much thought, because it's only been more difficult to win these last 10, 20 years. It just gets progressively harder to win in the sport because you can't just be named a national champion anymore. You just can't be given that title. You have to earn it on the field. And so what Nick Saban has done is nothing short of the best ever to me. And so Kirby Smart has been incredible. He has the potential to do so. He has been better more recently. But no, finding quarterbacks, recruiting, hiring, culture, all of those things. It's Nick Saban.
Nick Saban has been at Alabama since 2007, 16 seasons.
Yeah.
Care to venture a guess how many of those seasons have been double-digit wins?
Out of 16?
Yeah.
14?
15.
15 of 16.
His first season, they went 7-6.
Just 7. Yeah. Lost to Monroe.
12, 14, 10, 12, 13, 11, 12, 14, 14, 13, 14, 11, 13. I'm running out of steam here. 13 yeah. and 11.
You want me to season? No. You want me to play that? Yeah.
We're good. We're good.
Okay.
You get the point.
Yeah.
His ability to sustain success has been damn near impressive and frankly unparalleled throughout college football. Kirby has not proven he can do that to that level. By the time his career is said and done, he might. He could. He's got that opportunity in front of him if he wants. He's still a young guy. He's still in his 40s, right? He's got a long ways to go as a college coach. And by the time all is said and done, he could go down as the greatest ever. But for this moment in time, I think it's important to add that Nick Saban is still recruiting at a really high level. Nick Saban is still able to attract the best coaching talent around him. He is still able to put a product out there on the field that week in and week out is among the best, if not the best, in college football. It is not a situation like we described with, you know, a Ferentz or perhaps right. a Jimbo Fisher, a coach in a situation where we have to ask the question, are they running out of steam? That's not the case for Alabama.
But what about
Saban?
But what about the next 4 years at North Carolina?
Next 4 years at North Carolina, I still think I'd take Nick Saban. If I'm picking
at his age?
Yeah. Nick Saban's 71.
Yeah.
Does not appear as if he's slowing down much at the level he's recruiting and the heights to which that program can still rise.
But Georgia has more momentum on the field. We're talking about Nick Saban, divisional runner-up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you could argue, one might argue, as both of these places turn to new quarterbacks, that there's more to like about where Georgia is right now.
Sure.
Both have new offensive coordinators.
If you're North Carolina or just general coach rubric here,
yeah,
relies a little bit on the quarterback position. If you're a top flight quarterback, who do you have more confidence in is going to make you a pro prospect? Nick Saban or Kirby Smart?
Sure, Saban, of course.
The answer is Nick Saban. I think it has to be Saban.
I don't think I realized, as an aside, that you and Kirby Smart are of the same generation.
How dare you.
I did not realize that.
It's funny.
It is funny, Ty. Come on.
How dare
it's
you?
It's funny. Yeah, you would have been in like first grade when he was in seventh grade. You guys, if you were at the same school growing mm-hmm. up, you would have crossed paths. Maybe he recognizes you. You recognize him. Little Tyler. Same generation, Ty.
Kirby Smart is 47 years old.
Yeah, 6 years, 7 years. How much older? Few years.
About 6 years, yeah.
Handful of years. You guys are colleagues, pretty much.
Yep. Yep.
Just compatriots reminiscing about the early 80s, Ty.
Oh. How dare you?
It's funny.
It is funny, Ty.
Stop playing that sound. We going Nick Saban?
I'm going Saban.
The slipper still fits!
I don't know why I played that, but...
I'm going to revise.
Not after I played the sound.
Jonathan Smith. You can't overlook what Jay Smith has done.
Yeah, hope everybody enjoyed our bracket.
Yeah.
Over the last two episodes. Perhaps no surprise that Lord Saban would win this category, but interesting discussion to say the least. We appreciate all of our contestants here. Again, our final four was Saban against Harbaugh, Dabo against Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
Saban over Kirby in the final.
Which of the non-Saban and Kirby coaches listed would you most want to coach Notre Dame?
Oh, that's a good question. Would I most want to coach Notre Dame?
Yeah, the next 4 years. You have this list of terrific coaches.
Yeah.
So who are you most confident from this list would get Notre Dame that elusive playoff win?
I would probably say Lincoln Riley. I think Lincoln Riley would be the guy because I too have the internal quarterback rubric, and that has been one of the big missing links for Notre Dame with getting them to the next level. And I think Lincoln Riley could do that. So I think Lincoln Riley for me would be the answer. And I'd be willing to make some sort of trade off with a better offense, despite maybe not as good of a defense as they've had.
I would take Dan Lanning. Others receiving votes, Ty, because I stand by my... No, he wasn't on this list, so I didn't answer my own question accurately. Who would I take? Of this full list, non-Saban, non-Kirby? Oh, man. You know who I would take, Ty?
Jonathan Smith?
I would take... Who is your number three? I mean, I would probably take Harbaugh. But beyond that, I might take Brian Kelly.
Mm.
I might take Brian Kelly
I already tried that.
And recruiting.
No.
Well, Notre Dame is just not the place to win playoff games. I might try BK.
So look, fun episode, long episode.
Yeah.
Write in solidverbal@gmail.com. Look us up on social media. Hit us up on YouTube in the comments section. If you're listening, if you're on Patreon, comment on the episode or over in our Verballers Discord at verballers.com. Let us know what we got right, what we got wrong. I know we've got some folks who are watching along live that said they had Kirby coming out of the bracket. I would encourage people to debate and let us know who you have and what we got wrong, because this is obviously a thought experiment.
Sure.
It's been fun, Dan.
That's all I have, Ty. I haven't filled out a regular bracket yet. Have you?
I have filled out a regular bracket. My overall
winner. Who's your national champ?
My overall winner is actually Alabama, so it's thematic.
Nice. Okay. Doubling up football and basketball power.
For those who are listening to this a little bit early, courtesy of verballers.com, we do have a bracket pool. I will post the link to that in Patreon as well. It is free. We're playing for Pride, not Prize. But by all means, anybody else out there, if you've filed a bracket, if you are listening to this before the game start around noon Eastern on Thursday afternoon, feel free to hop on over. We'll leave it unlocked, so if you make a bracket and you want to enter it in after the fact, you can do that as well. Not a big deal. Keeping things loose and casual around here, but look for
loose
the solid
and
verbal.
Cash.
Look for the solid verbal, Dan. I will talk to you tomorrow for our Brew and A, all right?
That sounds wonderful. Verballers.com for our weekly, very strange, off-the-rails Q&A.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks for downloading, for listening, for playing along, for filling out your brackets at home. Enjoy March Madness, and we'll talk to you soon. Stay soft.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.